Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Jonathan Bennett joins me. We're going to be talking about Opsia, a great way to manage lots and lots of Windows and Linux machines. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Jonathan Bennett. Episode 535, recorded June 26th, 2019. Opsie. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, the little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and play with. Today is probably one of those, although it might be bigger scale than just having you play with it. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host, Jonathan Bennett. Jonathan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Randall, it's good to be here again. I was commenting during the pre-show that I haven't been on for so long, like 3 weeks now. I'm not sure if I know how to podcast anymore, so we'll have to do it live and see.
You know, yeah, they let anybody do this show, apparently, from some of my previous shows. I'm speaking, and you're home in something, Oklahoma. I forget the name of the town. Darn it, I should know by now.
Lawton. I'm here in Lawton, Oklahoma, in the corporate headquarters, the home office.
Right. And I am in the Tijuana kitchen set, as we like to call it. There are workers busy at busy work right above me, in the apartment above me. It was rather noisy with a lot of hammer banging and this morning I heard some sawing, so please forgive us if the audio isn't up to snuff. We have a really clean audio line, so you'll be able to hear every little nuance of those workers upstairs. Perfect timing. All right, so let's talk about what we have today. What we have today, if I can find my notes, where's my notes, here it is Opsie. And Opsie is an open source client management system to manage heterogeneous environments. It enables the deployment and configuration from OSs and software on Windows and Linux computers. Very ambitious goal. There's a lot of code to this. It's been around for something like 6 or 7 years, looking at the timelines on the GitHub. We're going to be bringing on, in just a moment, Matthias Radke, and Nico Wenselowski, I hope that's close. Probably murdered it already. And they're going to be talking to us about what this is about. And so far, all I know is this is management software. I was going through the detailed documentation, and I was scrolling and scrolling and trying to see what the UI would look like. And I tell you, they need to sort of get a better quick start. But we'll have them describe what this is all about in a few minutes. And we can also describe then what we weren't able to figure out in just the hour or so that we typically allocate for looking at this thing. So, Jonathan, what do you know about this so far?
Well, I know it's a system for doing automated patch installation. They also have, I noticed, the ability to do automated operating system installs through things like DHCP and PXE. So the idea of you have a server somewhere and it's got your image on it, and you say, I want this computer to boot off of this image, plug the computer into the network and turn it on, and PXE spins up and it automatically starts loading what you told it to, which I've done here at the house with Raspberry Pis. And so I'm actually really interested to know if what they're doing could interact with my little Raspberry Pi PXE setup. So I'll make sure and ask about that. But looking forward to learning more about it.
And again, it looks like this is something that would be like overkill if all you had was like three PCs in your home. But it certainly looks like the kind of thing that small to medium enterprises would want to use, maybe really large ones. I'd like to find out when we get the show going, like what their largest installation is, because I bet it's pretty big because this stuff looks like it has a lot of flexibility. But it also looks like you'll need a full-time SA just managing it if you have, you know, 100 machines out there that this thing is using. So, rather than us contemplating and soliciting, I don't know any words in that would make sense. Without us not being able to come forward, let's just go ahead and bring on our guests. So first we'll welcome on, and then it scrolled, Matthias Radke. Welcome on the show.
Hi, nice to be here.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm in Mainz, Germany.
Okay, cool. I've been in Germany, but I think only the parts that are near the ocean because I was on a cruise ship. Well, I've been down the Rhine. Doesn't that go down through Germany?
Mainz is directly at the Rhine, yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, then I've been done right by your place then. All right. Well, that was a long time ago, though. I went on a nice river cruise. That was a lot of fun. So give us a 30. Before we do that, let's not be biased here. Let's go ahead and bring on Nico Wenselowski as well.
Hello, everyone. I'm calling from Mind as well.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome. Cool. So let's go ahead and look at the 30,000 foot view. So we'll start with Matthias. When you're reaching for OPSI, what problem are you trying to solve?
We're trying to solve the problem when people have, for example, a company or maybe even a private network where they want to distribute the operating system, even if it's Linux, the big distributions, or any stable Windows version. They can distribute it via OPSI and also patch the systems live, distribute software on these clients, and also perform a software and hardware audition. So everyone knows which hardware is installed on the machine.
Cool. And is this the sort of thing that would also have like local private repos for your own local software to be able to be installed across your network?
Can you repeat the question again? I didn't get it completely.
Yeah, sorry. It's morning. It's morning for me. It's not morning for you. It's late afternoon for you.
Yes, late afternoon.
Evening. Yes. Yes. Okay. So one of the problems that I've seen in large companies is, you know, it's easy to say I want to get the normal installation of Vim or Perl or whatever like that, and you're going to get it from the public repos. But you have the secondary problem of what do you do when you have private software that you also want to share company-wide? Can you set up local repos for stuff like that?
Yes, you can definitely set up local repos for this. For example, when we distribute software on Linux clients, we usually use the operating system repos. If it's not available, you can also create your own OPSI package to distribute the software on your clients.
So, Matthias, have you been with the project since the beginning?
No, I applied here for about 4 years ago, and OPSI is, I think, in 1995 the project started.
Oh, that's much longer than the GitHub commits would show. So it's been around for a while.
Yes, definitely.
Cool. And Nico, have you been around longer than Matthias, or is it kind of equal?
Yeah, a little bit. I joined in 2013. I can tell a little bit more about the history of the project if you're interested.
Please, go ahead.
It started out as a project for a hedge fund agency. They wanted to distribute Windows 3.11 to about 300 clients, and they needed software to do this. And this was around 1994 when everything started. And this is when the first version was written. The version that came out in around 2004 was the first one released as an open source variant available to everyone. And we have been through some rewrites. This is the history you see in the GitHub repositories. So we are currently doing another rewrite to make it even better. But this is a rough timeline for the project.
Now, one of the things I saw was that there aren't many contributors to this, at least not to the documentation or any of the few other repos that I had on there. Is this really a project of a small team of people, or do you get lots of outside community involvement?
We are a small team of people working on this. We are doing this for a living. OPSI is woven with the company UIB. The company UIB started out as a general IT company that did a lot of geology services and IT as well. And since about 2008, I think it was, OPSI has became the main product we are distributing.
So you're giving away, is it a core for free or is it the entire project for free?
We have a free core. The free core allows you to do a lot of things already. You can distribute your software, your operating system, things like that. And then we have extensions that can be bought. These extensions provide extra functionality like adding UEFI support. And the thing we are doing is that we will develop these things. You can buy it. It's a one-time payment. And once enough people have bought something so that we have the development costs back, then this part will become free again, so everyone benefits with this.
Well, that's an admirable stance. I like that. It is open core, but it's now sort of like, well, you know, if we finally made our money back on it. I presume you're also offering consultation on rolling things out to a new installation or customizing things for companies.
Yes, this is what we do mostly for the money. Then, if you want to set up your own OPSI instance, you don't want to go through all the manuals and things like that. You can ask us, and we will help you with this, or we can train you in how to use OPSI, or give you hints at how do you best package your software.
Cool. And let's go back to Matthias for a minute to give Nico a chance to catch a breath. Matthias, so this is basically a giant server with all the configuration information on it and any of the local repos and stuff. What operating system can that be? I wasn't quite able to figure it out.
This can be one of the big Linux distributions we support, Ubuntu, Debian, CentOS, Red Hat, SLES, and OpenSUSE, and also Univention Corporate Server. It's always the current LTS version that you can install OPSI on.
And would it also run on a Windows master host, or do you absolutely need a Linux host?
We currently need a Linux host.
Okay, so even though you can support both Linux and Windows machines, that you still have written your primary core code in for Linux, and what languages is that in, and what's the architecture look like?
This depends on the component. For example, most of the backend is written in Python. The frontend is written in Java. Currently, we are internally switching to a Vue.js implementation, and some of the Windows components are written in Lazarus.
And what is Lazarus?
When I remember correctly, Lazarus is a Delphi fork. Turbo Pascal, sorry.
Okay. It's a Pascal-like language. Okay. That's, yeah. I never played much in that arena, although Pascal, I taught Pascal when I was a 16-year-old kid salaried at Tektronix. I was part of the training program there because I could teach really well. And So now, when you said Java just a second ago, did you mean real Java or do you mean JavaScript?
Real Java.
Wow. Oh. Hardcore. Now, I haven't heard of any projects using Java for a front end in a long time, and there's a reason for that. It sucks. So what are the most complex problems in trying to do this sort of system management, especially across heterogeneous machines?
The most complex problems are to make it work on all supported versions. For example, you have to make parts of the framework work on Windows and Linux all together. So you have to build all the stuff so it just runs smoothly and doesn't interfere with anything else.
Hey, Matthias, I want to jump in. You mentioned that it runs on all of these different Linux systems, not Windows. Has anybody tried making it work on a WSL, the Windows subsystem for Linux, yet?
As far as I know from our community, I think not. But that's definitely worth a try.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising, you know, the great evil in the open source world, Microsoft, has actually done something really cool with WSL. And, man, a lot of things just work.
Okay, yeah, maybe we'll try it and see how things work out.
I'm also curious, probably also a question for Matthias. Have you guys done anything with running the Raspberry Pi and its PXE mode with this?
Currently not. We haven't tried the PXE mode of Raspberry Pis, but we also have packages from the OPSI server core for the ARM architecture, and we also tested this on a Raspberry Pi and Banana Pi. So it also works from this as a server.
So you can use a Raspberry Pi as a server. Boy, that puts it within reach for a whole lot of people then, doesn't it?
Yeah, we also have a customer that runs the city infrastructure, and he has, for example, small offices or something like that where he has a Raspberry Pi and then just uses them to distribute the packages and operating systems. So he doesn't have to run a whole server, run this through via VPN, and so he can directly access the Raspberry Pi in the office and perform the task there.
So does OPSI support a model where you've got one big central server, either in a data center or, you know, your home office, wherever, and then miniature servers, like, for example, those Raspberry Pis, where they talk to each other and they all kind of see each other transparently? or do you have to VPN into each one to make changes?
This depends on your infrastructure. Of course, you can use VPN, but usually we have a model of a config server, which is the main host for all servers, and then you can install a OPSI depot, which then just hosts the specified clients for a small office or a company outside of the main headquarters.
Okay. And so OPSI has support for doing installation of OS over PXC. Is that right? I understand that right. It does it over PXC to install?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any support for running thin hosts, just running over PXC using OPSI?
We have one customer where we did a proof of concept with them that they had some, I don't know if you know this in the US, Eagle clients. They are usually also running via PXE, and then we had a customer that wanted to integrate them into OPSI, and then we just did a proof of concept to him that shows him that it just works, where we just load our PXE files and afterwards loads his firmware and also the Eagle PXE files and start this.
Excellent. Very good. And then we talked about this just a little bit. I want to swing back and revisit it because it's something I've never heard of before. And I don't know why it's such a brilliant concept. Your business model is open core until enough people pay for it, and then that feature becomes open source. Did I understand that right?
Yes, that's the way we do it. It's called co-funding modules, where Nico already said that we invest in amount of money into development of a new feature, and then we start selling it with a one-time payment depending on the amount of clients the customer has. And after we earn all the money we invested into developing this feature, it gets free for all.
And how has that worked out? I mean, how many features have made it from the open core model to the fully open source model?
For example, when the project started supporting Windows 7, this feature was also behind this, or it was the co-funded module, and after a short amount of time, it was set free, or free for all. Nico, you definitely know more about these features, don't you?
A little bit. I'm not sure how many features in total. I think it's about 10. Some of them were rather small. Other were larger changes like the NT6 support for Windows. And it's ever growing since.
I think that's just a neat idea. It puts open core in such a different space as far as the funding model goes. I think it's brilliant. Nico, while I've got you, let me ask you this. Can you give us a bit of information about kind of the installation sizes you guys have seen? Like, what's your biggest customer that's using this? How many machines are we talking about?
The biggest, they have between 40 and 50,000 clients. So we're kind of proud about that, because when the design, the architecture for the system was made like it is now, we were targeting about 500 clients that should be managed with this. And multiple thousands is general, is something we see a lot.
Did you guys have to do anything, fix any bugs, any problems that came out, that became apparent when someone tried to scale it up that big? Were there any big technical roadblocks?
Yeah, we had to load balance things a lot more. This was kind of difficult to do, and we are currently rewriting the server, so that we can deal with horizontal scaling a lot better than we can now. We can horizontal scale everything right now, but it's a lot of work, and we want to make this a lot easier for everyone.
Mm-hmm. What's the database that runs the back end of OPSI?
We have two solutions. Currently, we have a file-based system. Like, if you don't want to have a database, this was something that's been somewhat common. And the other thing we have is MySQL based, I think you call it MySQL.
it could be pronounced either way. You know, it's the strange thing about the internet. We all read all of these terms and come up with our own pronunciations of it. I've gotten some very strange looks over the years.
Well, I've heard directly from Monty himself. He calls it MySQL. So that's the authoritative version.
Well, now we know. And then what does the configuration look like on this? Is there a, you know, is there a standalone client? Is it all web-based? Is it all command line? How does one go about doing configuration and changes?
You can do both. You can do it with the command line or you can do it on the command line. The thing people see first usually is that we have the Java interface. This is a graphical interface you can use to configure the system. There's a little bit of things that are in configuration files you have to edit on the server. The other thing that we have is that we have a command line interface. So we have an open API, and every client we have uses that API. And this API can also be used by administrators to script their systems. So you can like fully automate everything that OPSI does.
Mm-hmm. I see in the notes that we were sent that when Munich moved away from Linux, that affected you guys somehow. I'm curious about this.
Yeah, Linux was a large project in Germany. We weren't affected directly by this, but in a political view, the project has been important. Has been like a signpost. Look, there's open source used widely throughout Germany, and it works. It just works. And once this has fallen away, it at least affects the standing of open source in Germany, I think.
And then, so 50,000 is your biggest customer. Are there any roadblocks that you see on the horizon that would prevent someone from scaling up even further than that?
It's harder to get new nodes online currently. This is something we want to avoid with the currently ongoing rewrite. But other than that, it works, and we hope it will stay this way. So we haven't found anything more blocking in our testings yet.
All right. And so then what about updates? So, you know, pick your security flaw of the week. There's a bunch of them. News of this comes out and an administrator goes, oh, we need to make sure and push this patch. What does the process look like once I've tested it on a couple of machines and I say, all right, I want to push this out to my whole fleet of OPSI or OPSI enabled machines? How does that work?
Yeah, you have a patch ready in whatever the patch looks like, and you want to deploy it. To deploy it, you have to package up first, which is, if you already have done this once or twice, it's an easy task. Then you install this patch on all your machines. This is the server machines that you're having. And then you switch to the management interface, either command line or the graphical interface, and then say, okay, deploy this software to all the clients. And then if you want to go this, you don't have to go right now because it's a very, very important security fix, you can trigger a push installation on all those clients. So they will get the update right now.
How quick is right now? Are we talking, you know, seconds, just network lag, the amount of time it takes to churn through it and it happens?
For the client to get the information that he has to do something, this will go out in like a second. And then you probably will be hitting some bottlenecks with your network throughput or things like that. But there isn't like a queuing that clients wait for other clients to finish. They just start working right now.
And so I assume if it's a patch that's kernel related, there's a flag somewhere in there to say, go ahead and schedule a reboot as soon as you install?
Yeah, for sure. This can be done. Some patches can be installed without the need to reboot. But if that is a patch that requires a reboot, you can trigger that as well from inside the OPSI scripts.
Okay. So thinking about kind of my day job, one of the things that I do is I install lots of patches and different updates on Windows machines. I assume that in some cases you integrate with Windows updates, but what about a program that doesn't support Windows updates, like maybe a Java update? How does that get handled?
We are completely separate from Windows updates, so you can use OPSI as a really like a standalone tool. You don't have to have a WSUS server or something like that. If you want to update an application that requires something special, like the JAR file that has to be replaced, you can tell your script. You're always having a script that controls how the rollout of the software is done to, like, for example, replace that file.
All right. And then probably this question is from Matthias. What about OpsiScript or OpsiScript? What is that something that you guys have, a scripting language that you guys have designed yourselves?
Yes, this was designed back in the days when it all started, basically for file copying, when this Windows 3.11 distribution started. But in the end, OpsiScript is mainly, or in most scripts, it's a program flow of Windows or Linux command line commands. So you don't have to re-implement everything in OpsiScript. You can just use bash commands or Windows command line commands to perform all the tasks.
Okay. And then do you guys integrate, and whichever of you is better to answer this question, feel free. Have you guys integrated with one of the CVE services so that maybe you can push alerts to administrators? Hey, this CVE is dropped. You might want to go update Firefox is the one we've seen in the past week or so. Is that a service you offer?
Currently not. We had a proof of concept adding a CVE database that works with OPSI, but the project hasn't gone further than just looking at could it be done. And yeah, we could get some kind of integration here, but it hasn't been automated. Maybe we will add something like this later, but currently there hasn't been much of a request for it.
Okay. And then I was just virtually whispered into my ear that we forgot to do something. Nico, what is your role in the project? Are you more administrative, or are you also one of the programming guys?
I'm one of the programming guys. Yeah, this is what I was when I joined. Right now, I'm a technical lead for the development.
And then Matthias, how do you slot into this? What's kind of your role at OpsI?
I'm partially backend developer, partially NetBoot product developer, and also responsible for the internal test environment, so we can test the packages before we release them to the next level.
Well, we can't let Jonathan have all the fun, but I've been listening to the slow and occasional very loud hammering going upstairs. We're trying to find a time that we can tempt the hammer gods again. So what's it like to keep developing this? Do you have tests for this? And this is for either of you.
We have tests for this. Every night we have virtual machines that are reinstalled with Linux clients. Then we are installing an OPSI product so that they are transformed into OPSI servers. They get a new client, and then these clients reinstall Windows 7, 8, 1, and 10, for example, so that we can test the core features of OPSI that they run well.
And do you have a sense of test coverage percentage?
Currently not. I don't know. Nico, do you have any numbers in the head?
Not an overall coverage. There are many independent parts, and we can't test all as part of unit tests, so that we have this large end-to-end test environment we are using. Pings are still sometimes tested by hand if there's something new or like a major change, but I couldn't tell you what the overall test coverage is.
And so it obviously knows how to update the Windows and Linux installations that it is babysitting. Does it know how to update itself?
It doesn't update itself. You have to somehow trigger it, depending on what you want to do. We want to leave this choice to the administrator. Some people, they are happily updating everything that comes out. So like if you have a Linux box, you want to install every update that comes there. Some people are more conservative, so we leave this choice to the administrator.
Okay, and so now I lost the thing I was going to go further. So you're up. I hate this because I'm busy getting distracted by the hammering that's going on, which is not helping at all. It's probably like one of the most difficult conditions I've ever used for one of these shows. That was it. OpsiScript. So you described kind of what OpsiScript is, but didn't describe really how it's used. You set it so that when events of certain types trigger, then this code is run, or is it only triggered manually, or is it only on system boot time? I mean, where's the usage of OpsiScript?
OpsiScript is used when a client has to perform something. We want to tell the client what to do, and this is where OpsiScript comes in. A normal if you are doing a operating system deployment, OpsiScript has a small role in finalizing the installation usually. If you are on a running client and you want to do something, OpsiScript controls what is done. For example, if you have the jar file we mentioned earlier, if you want to replace this somewhere on the system, the OpsiScript will tell, okay, I have this jar file on the server, and you put it on the client in this folder.
Okay, cool. And let's talk practical terms, because again, the manuals look detailed, and that sort of scared me that there wasn't more summary information that I was really looking for. Let's say I'm an administrator of a small department, maybe 25 machines, and so I want to get this set up to kind of automate the stuff I've been doing by hand or by other tools. How long do you think it will be before I feel comfortable and competent using OPSI? And that's for either of you.
Like a day to get everything up and running. So it's like a day to set up the server. We have a prepared virtual machine you can use. You can do it all by hand if you like. And then the larger part is starting with packaging your software. Since everything can be self-hosted, we only provide a very small set of software for everyone that is kept updated. But then people will start, okay, I've got like LibreOffice I want to deploy, and they will think about, okay, how can I do this? And the next step you usually encounter is, okay, I now got my company with 25 clients, and I need to configure it in a way that it works for my company. This is usually something that takes a lot longer, but to get like the basic setup running, I'd say a day is enough.
Cool. And I see you have a wiki and a forum. Is there a lot of available community support? Because obviously a lot of other people are using this.
We have a rather large community, yes. For everything you have questions, you can ask in the forums as well. All the developers we have are looking through the forums as well, and we try to help out there. The easiest thing if you want to start out with packaging is to search for OPSI and then a software you want to deploy. Sometimes it's just a little script you'll find, but often enough, this is all it takes to get a deployment of a software running.
I'm curious, in listening to what you guys are talking about, that it does, something that would be really cool is, does OPSI support doing backups? So if a machine has a hard drive crash, you can obviously use OPSI to, when you bring the new machine in, do an automated operating system install. Do you have any support for doing a backup restore as well?
We have. We offer imaging solutions, if you like this. You can like create a whole image of a machine. We have some, I'd say, it's a more intelligent version of the imaging as part of one of the paid extensions currently. And the other thing that is possible is that we have an integration with Clonezilla, so you could use Clonezilla to do something. And the next thing that comes to my mind is that the people from Bareos, this is a backup system, they have OPSI packages as well, so you can use OPSI to trigger backups through Bareos.
That is very interesting. I will actually have to do a bit of legwork and look into that myself, because that is a very interesting use case for this. What about Docker support? You mentioned you have a virtual machine. Is there a Docker image that's already spun up for this?
Currently not. I mentioned before we are rewriting the software, the server side of it at least. And once we are done with this, we will look further into Docker. We looked into this when Docker was like very new, and it didn't work as we expected, so we laid this to the side. Other than that, I have seen that some people have package OPSI to use in Docker, but I can't tell how good or how current this is.
That's one of the scary things about Docker. You can find a Docker image for almost anything, but then you go to looking and it's just some random guy that put it together, and that's a little terrifying.
Yeah, they have done everything right. I hope so.
You hope so. You guys mentioned as part of the rewrite, you're moving away from Java. Is that correct? And I didn't catch what language you're moving to.
We currently have a Java graphical interface. We want to replace this with something browser-based. So this will be the backend is currently written in Django, and the front end will be HTML with JavaScript. And then the other rewrite we currently have going is for the server side, but this should not affect the client side at all.
Okay. And then as we talk about, you know, doing software deployments, if we're just, say, installing LibreOffice everywhere, well, that's pretty easy. What if someone, God forbid, wants to do an automated deployment of something like Microsoft Office or the Adobe Suite, something that has, you know, license keying and all of that hairy stuff? Does OpSize support that, and how does that work?
Yes. You can do, like, everything. Yeah. Everything depends on how easy it is to deploy. If you have some Adobe product or the Microsoft Office, this is software that is very well prepared for deploying it, and OpSy can support you with handing over the license keys. You can hard code them if you like, but this isn't very elegant. And one of the extensions we have is that OpSy can help you manage your licenses. If you don't have a volume license and you have to, like, store-bought versions of the software, and you have to use this for your installation, you can do this with OpSy as well.
Matthias, did you want to jump in and comment on that too?
Yeah, I want to tell exactly the same.
Okay. So we've talked a lot about what OpSy has. Is there anything blatant that's missing? Anything you would like to put a call out for that if someone wants to jump on board and help, you would welcome patches for?
What would I like? Of course. I'm always interested in patches. The development we do for OpSy currently is a lot driven by our customers. But if everyone says, okay, I've got I would like this feature, chat us up in the forums. We are open for having outside contributions.
Okay, and then both of you, obviously being from Germany, just have to ask: is the company is there a German bias, let's say, in the internationalization and the source code itself? So someone that's not a speaker of German, can I dive into the source code and understand the comments and all of that?
I hope so, yeah. The source code is in English, and we try to have English translation as well as German ready once something is released. But since none of us is a native English speaker, I believe there is room for improvement there, yeah. But you should be able to understand everything.
Okay. This is always an interesting question to have to ask, because you know, as an American, I don't want to say, oh, well, the whole world has to use English just for me. But at the same time, it's kind of become the modern-day lingua franca, especially in programming and things like that. So it's always an interesting topic to ask about. What about the OpenSUSE build service? This is something else that got mentioned in the notes that were sent to us. Is that something you guys make use of? And where does it fit in to what you're doing?
I think mainly that's a question for Matthias, probably.
So mainly we are creating a package that we then upload to the OpenSUSE build service. So we do not have to build every package for every distribution by hand or by one machine. The OpenSUSE build service provides all the infrastructure. So we just upload the files, the build process starts, and in the end we have the Debian or RPM packages ready for our customers that can be then installed.
Okay. I've looked a little bit at the OpenSUSE build service, and obviously it's pretty neat what they're doing, what they're letting people do, and I'm glad to see more people taking advantage of it. What license is the, at least the parts of OpSy that have been open source, what license does that get released under and why?
I can answer that. We started out with GPL version 2. And we have since then switched to HGPL version 3 to avoid getting caught with the GPL loophole, because we had some cases with that, and we want OpSy, whenever it is used and maybe modified, to be available to everyone.
Did you say the GPL loophole?
Yeah, there's what's the proper term for it? There's some kind of loophole people could exploit where they would provide services with software used licensed under the GPL, and they wouldn't have to provide their changes they made to the system.
So if GPL code is not actually running on the end customer's computer, then they don't have to push changes back and make them publicly available, right?
Yeah, this is what it's about. Yeah, we want this to be open source, so this is why we choose AGPL.
Okay, and then if someone pushes a patch to you, do they have to assign copyright to the company there? Is there a contributor agreement of that sort?
Yeah, there's a contributor agreement. Sorry, because of the past I mentioned earlier. We want to be able to maybe relicense the code if this becomes necessary again.
Okay. And that's probably also kind of important for being able to do new features in the open core model. It probably also helps with that, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's helped. One of the things that is cool about OPSI is that the server-side methods can be extended easily. We are dropping in some code files that are Python code, so you wouldn't have necessarily things to be hard-coded into the core, so you can just exchange a few files in a special directory and this gets served as part of the API of the service.
And I know we've talked some about this, but is there anything else that's on the roadmap, any features that are coming up soon that we haven't talked about that we should know about?
Secure boot is coming up. This is something people are wanting for a time now. For those not familiar with the topic, the old network booting was PXE. Since then, laptops and computers have moved on to the extensible firmware images, and these support a different kind of net boot. And one special thing they have is that they allow what they are calling a secure boot is that they allow only for signed binaries to be run. And we are working on integrating this into OPSI. So this is probably most interesting for people having a company with special security requirements. But yeah, this is something coming up.
Cool. Well, we're almost out of time, so I want to ask just a few more questions and then let you guys go. And hopefully the hammer will stay quiet. Shh, you're doing it right now. Just stay like that. Okay. never had this problem here before. I've had sirens go by sometimes, but spoke too soon. Okay. Anyway, so is there any component on the client machines that OPSI is talking to perform actions, or is it really just a native install?
We have an agent running on the client machines, so this is used to communicate between the server and the client. The agent can be configured in different ways. The default is once the machine starts up, it contacts the server, and the server will then tell the client what to do.
Cool. And it like does it on a cron job or something?
No.
Or continually?
You could automate this. You could configure the client to behave like checking every hour or so, something like that. This is possible, but it's not our default.
All right. So normally you're in continuous contact with these then?
No? Pardon? I didn't understand it.
Normally you're in continuous contact between the agents and the central server.
The agent is running, but it's not in continuous contact. It will be triggered by special events. The default is once the login shows up, but you could configure it to be triggered either by an event we provide, or you could use your own events. We had some customer working with scheduled tasks in Windows recently to do some special, some special triggers. This is also possible.
Now, obviously, there's some kind of scheduler also in the central server. Is it flexible? Does it understand business days, for example?
Not exactly, I'd say. If you want to limit the deployments to like a specific day or something like this, you would have to script a little bit. But this is something that is doable. We have a lot of customers that tend to update their machines only on the weekends. So they use the OPSI API to automate their tasks. Once there are updates for software, they will automatically wake up the clients they have on the network through Wake and Learn, and then push the updates to these clients. And once they're done, the clients get shut down again.
Awesome, awesome. Well, that's sort of the kind of thing I was looking at, because typical problems involve like scheduling, you know, across a broad streak. You don't want to set up cron jobs in each individual machine to do all that, because then when you want to change it, you've got to update all these crazy crons. So again, we're almost out of time. Is there anything, and this will be for both of you, but we'll start with Matthias. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure gets covered before we have to let you go?
I think we covered the basic things. And if you want to get more information, yeah, read this humongous documentation. where we try to document everything we do, and therefore this documentation is really large. But yeah, it covers all the information we do.
Cool, cool. And Nico, same question?
Yeah, I would join into that. Don't be scared by the large documentation. We try to make it possible for everyone to use Opsy without like consulting our company. So this is why this is really, really large. And I believe you can do it. You just have to take like step by step. And since the software is that old and has that many features, you probably don't need everything that there could be done. Just start out small.
Sure, sure, of course. Do you know if there are screencasts and things available in, say, YouTube?
Yes, we have some YouTube videos up. If you search for, I think it's called OpsyTube is the channel, you should find some videos explaining how things are done.
Cool. I could have looked there, I guess, if I had another hour. I don't give myself ever enough time to research these shows. Well, it's good because that way I'm a proxy for our home audience. So, or wherever they are, they don't have to be at home. They can be at work or something. Like I said, we're almost out of time. We've got two more questions I want to ask each of you. So we'll start with Matthias. What's your favorite scripting language? What's your favorite programming language? And what's your favorite text editor?
My favorite text editor is VI. My favorite scripting language is the Bash. And my favorite programming language is Python.
Great. Okay. And Nico, same question?
I'm a Python guy, totally. So I have to vote for Python on this. yeah.
I never get a break.
I'm sorry. I forgot the other question.
Text editor.
I will opt for Sublime Text, I use it mainly with the VI mode.
Okay. Well, I'm using VS Code for all my Flutter and Dart stuff, but I use it in Emacs mode. So it's the right CAN bindings. I can go right to the right keys without having to think about it. So I didn't have to learn their menuing system or anything like that. So that's been working out well for me. So it's been wonderful, and I'm glad you put up with a little bit of hammering we've had going on here. Hopefully it wasn't too much louder in the soundtrack. And thanks for the two of you for coming on and talking about Opsy. I'm sure it's going to be exposed to a lot more people now because of this. So thank you, Matthias, and thank you, Nico.
Yeah, anytime soon. Thank you.
Awesome. That was Matthias Radko, where to go, scroll, Radke, and Nico Winslowski, or if I didn't mangle it too bad, what do you think there, Jonathan?
So technically a very interesting project. But goodness, probably the thing that surprised me and also interests me the most is their funding model. You know, we've been doing this for a while, and it's not often that someone comes up with a new funding model for open source. And this co-funding model is really something novel, at least in my experience. And, you know, as we were wrapping up, I started thinking, boy, I wonder how transparent they are about this. And, you know, did just a little bit of looking. They've got a webpage here where they just openly tell you, so these are the functionality that we've done, and here's how much it costs. And so most of these are like 1,000 or 2,000 euro. And then they also have to the right of that, here's the percentage funded it is. And so they just let everybody know. So if you want a MySQL backend for configuration data, it's 2,000 euro, but it's 75% funded. And so as soon as it hits 100% funded, it's going to go open source for everybody. And I've never seen a company do that before. And that is so neat. It's such a better version of the open core model. It fixes, I would say, most of the problems with doing something open core. It just, it's such a neat idea. I'm very impressed. I like
that. I'm going to actually push back on you there a little bit. I'll play the devil's advocate, which is that when it gets to like 90% funded, then do I want to be the guy that puts it over and the next guy gets it free? I mean, that's a little weird. But I don't know. Maybe that doesn't happen that often. Maybe people just buy it when they buy it, and they don't care how close it is to being totally funded. Oh, you know what? Loquacious V2 in the chat room says, "Did it do blockchain?" I'm sorry, we forgot the blockchain question. Oh well, that's probably fine. Next week you'll be pretty happy. All you guys that want blockchain. But let me see. What else can I say about this? So this is it fills an interesting problem space of management for heterogeneous systems, scaling the system administrator, as it were, so you don't have to have like a bunch of Windows sysadmins and a bunch of Linux sysadmins trying to figure out, when do we roll this out to? And they have all these spreadsheets where they go, well, this is running 4.0 and this is running 5.2 and all that sort of stuff. So this does solve that problem, it sounds like, pretty well. Although, again, more tutorials, boys. maybe some of these videos actually would have gotten me a little further along. I'm pretty sure they would have actually. Sometimes a screencast is all you need. Anything else before I run down the upcoming guests?
At the top of every README and big documentation page, there needs to be a quick start link. If you just want to make it work, look here, and then come back to this mile-long document for all of the nitty-gritty details.
Yes, I know. It's just crazy. Anyway, so let's go through the upcoming guests because we're running close to the end of time here. Well, not the end of time forever, but the end of time for this show.
You heard it here first, folks.
They let anybody do this show. That's pretty obviously my clap for that. Next week, for those of you who've been looking for the next blockchain show, is CX, which is a general purpose interpreted and compiled programming language with some very strict type systems, too early in the morning still, and a syntax similar to Golang. CX provides a new programming paradigm based on the concept of affordances. And I know there is a strong bias for this to be able to create Ethereum contracts. So for those of you that love blockchain, you're going to get a lot of that next week. So following that is Micronaut, which is a modern JVM-based full-stack framework for building modular, easily testable microservices and serverless applications. The following week after that, I'm going to be at OSCON, and I'm trying to figure out if we need to schedule a guest ahead of time or there's going to be any announcements at OSCON. I put requests into the right people at the top people at OSCON to try to figure out if there's going to be an announcement there, and I want to get them on the show if I can. The biggest problem is that we tape Floss Weekly during the sort of the opening keynotes. So if somebody wants to make an announcement at the opening keynotes, they can't also be on the show. So that gets a little tricky. Following that, we have a newly scheduled guest. Bumped into this guy, Justin Ryok, I think is his name. I don't pronounce his last name. Ryok? Ryok's probably close. That's how it's written. Bumped into him at Yapsi, which was only a couple weeks ago. Was it a couple weeks ago? Last week? My head's all blurred together. Anyway, I think it was last week, actually. So he and I have chatted a little bit. He is currently working for a company that provides commercial services and support for open community editions of various open source software. So that's sort of how the conversation started. But then when I started to say, well, why don't you come on the show and talk about that? He says, well, I can also talk on, the definition of free versus open source. How RMS is sort of in some ways a little crazy about the rest of the community and how some of that has come down over the years. And again, modern enterprise built on open source, talking a little bit about what his company does, but also about just in general, how really open source has become the backbone of almost all the major players these days. So it's really, really amazing. It's been a lot more fun to do this show because everybody knows what open source is now, which is really fun. He has some opinions and some observations and some summaries on why Floss is more secure because more eyeballs are staring at it. He actually has some data on that, and it's looking pretty good. And also, he's apparently an expert in neural networks, and he's going to talk about why TensorFlow is amazing. Now, I don't know if we're going to get to all these topics in the show, but this was some sort of possible topics. So we'll have that narrowed down before he comes on the show. We'll try to get it down to like one or two bullet points, but we'll figure something out. Following that, the only one that's still scheduled, or the last one on the current schedule, is Serverless Frameworks, and that's the name of the company, and they enable easy deploy for serverless apps. So that's going to be pretty fun. We're still looking at more guests. I have a guest that was waiting for August dates to be opened up. I just did that a couple days ago, so I will forward the note back to them and say, take it August. We have them now. Twitch.tv/Floss is the link for the homepage of this show. And from there is a link to the giant spreadsheet, as I call it, which is where I'm doing my scheduling pretty much out in the open. There are some hidden columns that you can't see that we use for the back-end administrative tasks, but the two main columns, which is the date and who's participating. And if you go down a little ways on the screen, you also see the people we're talking to. If there is somebody you'd like on this show, this is how this happens. If there's somebody you would like on the show that isn't on that schedule already, which means I'm already talking to them, please have the community coordinator or the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is right there on that same page. And I will get my best to put them in as quickly as I can. I'm really, really getting good at this after 12 years. So there we go. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays at live.twit.tv. You can watch all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and you can talk to us about things in the chat room, and you can suggest questions for our guests in the chat room. We didn't think we had any this time, but just a reminder to do blockchain. So and you can follow us at Floss Weekly on Twitter. I'm looking at building up a medium.com, they call it a publication, where multiple authors can contribute to it. So that way all my co-hosts can also post articles and stuff. And it will have an RSS feed, so you can drag that into your all your notification systems. You know, if you have IFTTT or whatever it is, you can take the RSS feed from there and make it page you when things happen, or give you a notification. Anyway, so I hope to have that set up within the next few weeks, but you know, my time is precious, so we'll see. I'm trying to get that back and replace the thing we lost with Google Plus. You can follow me at Merlin on Twitter. That's M-E-R-L-Y-N. I will be at OSCON in mid-July, which is about 4 weeks from now, I think it is. No, not even that, like 3 weeks. I will be at DragonCon in Atlanta on Labor Day weekend. We're going to give a Flutter talk. I'm going to be on three other panels. That'll be pretty exciting. I'm going to be at All Things Open, which we talked about last week's show, in October. They offered us a discount code. So if you want to go to Raleigh, North Carolina. It's a wonderful place to be that time of year. The conference is relatively affordable anyway, but we have a special code when you check out on their site that makes the ticket. Enter Floss Weekly, all lowercase, and you'll get a $99 deal, which is like nothing, absolutely nothing. So much better than OSCON. That's like 100 times as much. So there we go. 10 times as much? I can't do math today. Anyway, no, it's probably 10 times as much. Anyway, that's where I'm going to be. How about you? What do you want to plug there, Jonathan?
So I'll mention that you can follow me over at Twitter at JP_Bennett. And then over on Hackaday, I don't know what they were thinking, but someone decided to give me a weekly column. This Week in Security runs every Friday. Come check it out. If you want to read instead of listen to the security news, Fridays at Hackaday.com. Look for it. And that's all for me.
Awesome, Jonathan. And thanks once again for handling the other position, the co-host for this show. And that way I could, for extra long amount of time, keep muted and just feed you questions so that the hammer guys didn't get too interfering in the show. Hopefully, I'll know on the sound check when I actually play the show back later just how bad this was. You missed like the jackhammers yesterday and the saw this morning, so I'm glad we did it right now.
Stop! Hammer time.
I'm not looking forward to being in the apartment here all the rest of the day working for my client in Santa Monica, ZipRecruiter, because it got so annoying yesterday. They actually just left for a little while because it's you know, when you have the water torture treatment, the water drip torture. That's sort of like what this is, because you never know when the next hammer is going to come. Anyway, that's enough on that, and enough on you, and enough on me. We'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.